理课堂听 class.com。
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Changing the Face of America, the Legacy of Frederick Law Olmsted. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Troy Peterson, and today we are looking at an interesting article. It's a People article, and it's about a man who is a living legacy in American history. And that is because he changed, literally, the face of America. Now, when we think about the face of something, we're not just talking about a certain aspect concerning maybe political life in America or education. We're actually talking about America's landscape. And this man, Frederick Law Olmsted, was America's first landscape architect. And his legacy is still with us today because of the famous places in the United States, such as New York Central Park, even the United States Capitol, and many, many other places, including Stanford University. His imprint, his mark was left because of his designing the landscape of these areas. Well, with me today in the studio are three hosts to discuss today's article. It's in your Advanced magazine on page 14. So let's then have our hosts introduce themselves, beginning with Ethan.
Hi, everyone. I'm excited to be here and learn about what we can learn from this amazing man.
And hi, I'm Phil. I'm glad to be here. It's amazing what Frederick Law Olmsted has done in America.
And this is Bill. Interesting to me, Troy, his foresight, which has carried through and left these places beautiful 100 years after his death.
And I think that's one thing about Olmsted that he did say in the process of redesigning or building or landscaping. He said we need to think way beyond our period of time, our own generation, realize that we're going to be leaving a legacy for many years to come. Well, this is Advanced Studio Classroom. If you've just joined us, take your Advanced magazine and turn to page 14, and we will begin then the reading at the top of the article.
America's first landscape architect. Living legacies. His landscapes remain as vibrant today as when he created them more than a century ago. Frederick Law Olmsted, America's first landscape architect and co-designer of New York City's Central Park, was a visionary. While most people see only moments ahead, Olmsted could plant a landscape and know what it would look like 100 years later. During his distinguished career, Olmsted designed everything from parks to private gardens. Two places that bear his mark are Biltmore Estate in North Carolina and the U.S. Capitol grounds in Washington, D.C. Biltmore Estate. Spread across 8,000 acres in the Blue Ridge Mountains, Biltmore Estate reflects one man's wealth and another man's genius. In 1889, George Washington Vanderbilt began constructing a 250-room mountain retreat near Asheville, North Carolina. If the structure seemed immense, the grounds were colossal. Buying up forests and farmland in every direction, Vanderbilt acquired 125,000 acres. He then hired Olmsted to turn them into a proper setting for his home.
Thank you, Marcy. This is Advanced Studio Classroom, and we are reading in your Advanced magazine on page 14. We've just now heard the first portion of today's lesson, and it's a People article on Frederick Law Olmsted. He's here, considered to be America's first landscape architect. And what we don't realize, perhaps, our listeners and many of those who've never heard of his name before, is that he He completed over 500 different projects in the United States and outside the U.S. as well. Well, he was a man who was born in Hartford, Connecticut. It says he was raised as a gentleman. This is some additional information concerning his own bio, his background. And he never actually fully attended college, but he became a very learned man because he traveled a lot. And he also spent time in Europe as well as in China. And I think when you think about fashion designers, we know that they often will leave perhaps a their local area where they live, and they'll travel abroad in order to gain a larger perspective so that they can take that perspective and put it into their profession. And this is really what Olmsted did. In some ways, he reflected, for his time, he reflected what was happening in Europe. But he also had a vision for America, and he wanted to see kind of the spirit of the United States, the spirit of America represented in his architecture. So what do we read here in the first paragraph, Ethan?
Well, we see that Frederick Law Olmsted was America's first landscape architect, and he was also the co-designer of New York's Central Park.
Okay, and it says he was a visionary. What do we mean by the word visionary?
Well, he was a visionary because he could see far into the future. I mean, he wasn't a fortune teller, but he could imagine what these places would look like 100 years later after he was gone.
Now, when we talk about the word architect, Bill, we usually refer to someone who drafts plans for buildings.
Right, somebody who just might design an office building or even a house, but a landscape architect works with the grounds around buildings and homes.
And it is as much of a science, an engineering feat, to design a set of grounds to landscape them appropriately as it is to build a building.
Certainly, it's one thing to just plant a garden, but Olmsted was able to see, what is this garden going to look like 50 or 100 years into the future?
And when you see something that is well landscaped from an aerial position, from in the air, you can see how well something has been designed. Now, this was true of European gardens in his day. We know that's true in France as well as in Britain. They had some very carefully cultivated gardens. It's true of Japan, in fact. So there has been, at least in the history of the world, the design and development of beautiful gardens and terraces and parks that somehow magnify or accentuate perhaps the culture or the period of that time. Well, that was true with Olmsted as well. He wanted to find some way to reflect the American spirit through his landscape artistry. So let's just jump back up to the top. After the title, it says America's First Landscape Architect. It says Living Legacies. We talk about Mr. Olmsted as being a living legacy. What do we mean?
Well, we refer to him as a living legacy. A legacy is something that you leave behind when you go from one place to another or when you die. And so his legacy is that he has left behind these beautiful designs, but they are also living because they continue to be vibrant and beautiful even today.
Okay. So as a visionary, we see here, Phil, that he could see something that people could not see.
Well, he could see a landscape and know what it would look like 100 years later. He could plan that landscape and imagine what it was going to look like, way into the future.
Because when you plant bushes and flowers and trees, obviously they're all immature. They're very small. They're seedlings. So you have just the beginning of what you hope it will become in the future. But he was able to see 100 years from now, this small oak tree that we're planting will be, this size, and it will fit well with the other plants and shrubs and the design of the rest of the garden that he designed.
And the landscapes that he did design fit in with the surroundings, too. It wasn't just a radical change of what existed, but what he was able to do was work with what was there, and so that it all kind of worked in harmony together.
Now, that was certainly true with New York Central Park. I understand that around 1850, the state of New York, the legislature authorized the city of New York to use the power of eminent domain, it was called, to acquire, to get 700 acres of land. And it was at that point then, a little bit after that, Phil, that Mr. Olmsted was appointed to oversee the design of this park.
That's right. In 1857, Olmsted was appointed superintendent of New York City's projected Central Park. And they had a competition to select a new plan for the park, and he worked together with a British architect named Calvert Vaux in developing the successful design.
And this park is 843 acres. That's a huge park. And some of the things about that park, I think, that are interesting is that he wanted to find a way. There were basically three forms of transportation in his day: walking, or people who would ride bikes or horses, and then those who, cars weren't around at that time. So he had bikes, those who would walk, and those who took horses. And he wanted to find a way to divide up the pathways within the park so that walkers, people who are walking in the park, weren't disturbed by horse riders. And horse riders weren't being disturbed by people riding bicycles. And so they had this labyrinth of roads that were built in the park. And some of them are even hidden, very well hidden. But he didn't want the city to drive around the park, so he built roads through the park. And again, he was very concerned about green spaces, having green spaces within, at that time, New York, of course, was a bustling, growing, fast-paced city, and still is today. But he wanted to find a way to bring the natural environment of the area to New Yorkers.
Well, and it's very beautiful. We have a picture of it down on the bottom of page 14. And I am amazed that something this beautiful could be in the middle of such a big metropolitan area.
Well, true. Central Park, I believe, if you look at its history, it didn't have a lot to offer. I mean, there was 843 acres there, but what I understand is that there was also lots of bogs, lots of wetland. It was very low. There was lots of garbage that had to be cleaned up and picked up. So it was there are lots of shanties, or these small little places that people, poor people, had built in order to live in. Many of them were immigrants from other countries that had arrived in America. And so he was given the responsibility to clean all of that up. And so I think it took him about 900, he employed 900 men in 1857 when they began designing the park.
So he had a distinguished career that we see there in line 7. Distinguished means relating to a respected and admired person or that person's work.
Okay, so he designed everything from parks. He was actually considered to be a park maker, is all one word, and he also designed private gardens. So two places that we're going to talk about today and tomorrow that bear his mark are the Biltmore Estate in North Carolina. Phil, you're from North Carolina.
That's right.
And also the United States Capitol grounds in Washington, D.C. So these two places in particular, among many others, bear his mark. What does that mean?
To bear his mark means that they show his imprint, or they show his influence.
Hmm.
So we can see the influence of his work in these two places.
There's also another idiom we might use in this instance. We would say he left his mark. And he left his mark on the designing the landscape for these two areas. Interesting. Let's look at the Biltmore Estate then as we begin this part of the article here in Advanced. It says it spread across 8,000 acres in the Blue Ridge Mountains. That's where you'll find the Biltmore Estate. Of course, it was built, or I should say a wealthy man had it built, and his name, actually might be familiar to some people, was George Washington Vanderbilt. The Vanderbilt family, of course, then and even today, still a very wealthy family. Okay, so you've been there, Phil.
Yeah, I've been there. It's probably about 40 miles from my home. It is the largest private home in America, and on the estate, they have beautiful gardens and forests. He really did a great job designing the area around the home.
Yes, as you said, it's the largest privately owned home in America. In fact, it took 1,000 workers 6 years to build this home. It has 250 rooms, It includes 65 fireplaces, 34 bedrooms, 23 bathrooms, 3 kitchens, and it has a massive 102-step stone staircase and a huge iron chandelier in the main entrance area that has 72 electric light bulbs in it, and the great meeting hall, which is where they would often serve and dine with guests, has 74 feet long by 42 feet wide. So it's a huge, huge place. Now, it costs some money to get into this place.
It's not cheap. The tickets, they're anywhere from $35 to $40 US.
Okay. You might want to go to Disney World instead. But this is a fantastic place. Again, give us a little, we have a box here on George Vanderbilt.
Yes. Vanderbilt is an American family of financiers that gained its initial wealth from the shipping and railroad business in the mid-1800s. So they are very wealthy, and they made that wealth in the railroad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he was then a shipping and railroad baron, we might say, and it's in located in the Blue Ridge Mountains, a very beautiful part of the United States.
That's in western North Carolina. And I wanted to mention also, it says Mountain Retreat near Asheville, North Carolina. The Vanderbilt family actually had mansions all across the country, and this just happened to be one of those locations.
And it's interesting that he asked this man, Mr. Frederick Olmsted, to be the designer, the man who would design the beautiful gardens surrounding this huge mansion. Now, again, there were 8,000 acres that's a part of this estate. So he certainly didn't incorporate all 8,000 acres, but I think about 250 acres of the estate was used for development. It says here, buying up forests and farmland in every direction, Vanderbilt acquired 125,000 acres. And then he hired Olmsted to turn them into a proper setting for his home. I don't think it includes all 125,000 acres, because some of that is timberland. It's just a large part of lots of forest.
Yeah, a lot of that is the surrounding forest and grassland. There's also some lakes. The road going in just sort of twists and turns. It goes in between several lakes and forests. It's really a beautiful drive into the mansion.
Well, let's hear more about the Biltmore Estate and have Marcy now read for us, beginning on page 15 to the end of today's lesson.
Olmsted envisioned a series of small pleasure gardens around the mansion. He also designed the 250-acre Deer Park, a wooded game preserve like those found on English country estates. Most of the remaining land, some 100,000 acres, was planted as timberland. He recommended that bottom land along the French Broad River, which flows through the property, be used to raise cattle for manure to be spread as fertilizer. The gardens at Biltmore are spectacular, especially in spring, but the 3-mile approach road to the mansion provides an unforgettable experience. Olmsted worked in concert with nature, says Bill Alexander, landscape and forest historian at Biltmore. His great strength was his mastery of grading and the landform, the subtle positioning of roads and paths so that you don't notice them when you're looking across the landscape. It's this grasp of scale and the earth that is the fundamental canvas of Olmsted.
Thank you, Marcy. This is Advanced Studio Classroom. We're now on page 15 in your Advanced magazine, continuing with the lesson of America's first landscape architect, Frederick Law Olmsted. Now, he, of course, was commissioned by George Vanderbilt, a very wealthy financier, shipping and railroad magnate, I guess you might say. But he had commissioned Mr. Olmsted to create the gardens and the terraces surrounding this beautiful home. We have a picture of it on page 15 called the Biltmore Estate. And it says that he envisioned something.
Yes, he envisioned a series of small pleasure gardens around the mansion. And that just means that he came up with the ideas and he was imagining what these would look like in the future.
Okay. Now, that's a little different than saying one is a visionary, right? We discussed that at the beginning of the article. Someone who tends to see beyond their time. They tend to see beyond their generation. We would call that person a visionary.
That's right. He could see well into the future what the landscape would look like probably 50, 100 years, you know, after he had died.
And someone had said that, that's a gift. And here in the article it says, though he envisioned something. So again, when he looked at a piece of land or a plot of land, he could imagine what it should look like or what kind of changes would be necessary in order to form the land in such a way to become the garden or the, in this case, the park or the terrace or whatever he wanted it to be. He could envision it just by looking at it. So what did he see there? Apparently they designed a deer park.
That was a game preserve, and a game preserve is an area of land kept in its natural state for wild animals to live in to be protected.
Okay, so it says that he put lots of effort into creating or building, designing this game preserve, but then there was another remaining 100,000 acres, Ethan.
Yes, and this was planted as timberland, and I went on the website. We have it down at the bottom, www.builtmore.com. And I looked, and there's hiking trails all through this wooded area, and it just looks gorgeous. I would love to go there and walk around in these forests.
Well, I think if you visit the place, again, there is a fee to get in. It's fairly expensive. It still is privately owned. And I understand, too, that within the house itself are many old antique artifacts, many of them from other countries in the world, including furniture, paintings, mosaics. They said it's quite a museum within itself. And so it's probably worth the visit.
It is quite a museum. All the things that you can see inside the house that have been collected from all over the world. And of course, it does take a lot of effort for them to maintain this place. Mm. So you can understand why the price of the ticket would be high. But like I said, it's about $35 to $40 to get in.
Wow. You've been there, Bill.
Yes, and Phil and I were talking about earlier some of the special features that are also inside the mansion, such as a bowling alley and also a swimming pool that's down in the basement, which these two ideas were revolutionary considering the time that this place was built.
Mm. And imagine 1,000 workers spending 6 years on building this mansion. So there was great cost involved, but then Mr. Vanderbilt, of course, probably one of the wealthiest Americans of his day, if not in the whole world at that time, had the money to spend to build an estate or a mansion this size.
Well, and we're talking about the 100,000 acres of timberland, and that's one of the things we see is Olmsted was a conservationist. He really wanted to preserve and protect the natural environment. And so he even went through and trained people what plants they needed to take out of this forest so that it would help the trees to grow better and try and protect it so that it would be around in the future.
Hmm. So he had the vision to see that retaining the timberland was important. And it said here he recommended, probably to Mr. Vanderbilt, that the bottom land along the French Broad River, which flows through the property, be used to raise cattle. Why? Well, when you feed cattle, of course, they make manure. And manure is something that can be used as fertilizer. What is manure?
It's excrement from animals, especially from horses and cattle. Mm. And many farms will use that. And in this case, they had so much land, they would need all the fertilizer for the gardens.
Okay. And we go on. In fact, here in the article, it talks about the gardens, Phil. What does it say?
Well, the gardens are very beautiful, and he designed them as pleasure gardens. So it was a place where he and the family could go out and relax and maybe read a book and spend time together.
Now, as a landscape artist, you're not only planting trees and bushes and flowers, but you're also landscaping. You're moving earth around. You're moving dirt and creating forms and design and angles in such a way that the whole place turns out to look quite spectacular. But especially in the spring, this place is quite beautiful.
Well, yes, and it says the 3-mile road to the mansion provides an unforgettable experience. And I looked online again at this Biltmore.com, and there's some very beautiful pictures of the flowers and the natural forest growing along this road during the springtime.
And you reminded us that as a conservationist, of course, Olmsted was also concerned about finding a way to complement the surrounding environment. He didn't want to, cut it away, but he wanted to find a way for everything to mesh together.
It says he worked in concert with the nature, and that means together and in agreement according to a design or plan. So he worked with his surroundings and molded this place.
Okay, so to work in concert with something, as you just said, in fact, here we see it's one of our vocab focus words. It's an idiom, actually. It says to work together in agreement according to a design or a plan. Now, we can also use this idiom with reference to people working in an office, couldn't we?
Yes, we could. We could say that Bill and I work in concert, meaning we work well together. We could also use it in talking about a machine, mm-hmm. that all of the parts in an engine, for example, work in concert, or they work together to form a bigger purpose.
Okay. And the boss might say to his or her employees, you know, if the company is going to grow, we need to work in concert together here. Okay. Well, we see on down here a quote by Bill Alexander, who happens to be the landscape and forest historian at the Biltmore Estate. He says that the strength of Olmsted is his mastery of grading and landform. Now, those are two special words we don't commonly use, but if you're talking about landscape architecturing, you would talk about the words grading and landform.
Yeah, grading just means to smooth out the land or to carve the land so that it will be at the appropriate level that you want, to literally shape the land. But landform would be the land as it exists naturally before you even touch it. So he was able to work with what was already there, the landforms, and then to make the necessary changes through grading the land.
Okay, so when you shape the land, you grade it. When they build highways and new roads, they must first grade the area, which means they have to level it off, don't they?
Well, yes, and if we refer to in driving, you will see in the North America sometimes the grade of a road, and that means how steep the road is, and it just tells you how steep it is and what you need to be aware of what the grade is.
Okay, so the grade then has to do here, we read, with a desired level that they are wanting for the land. The shape of the land needs to have a certain level, whether it's high or low.
It also says that he was very good at the subtle positioning of roads and paths so that you don't notice them when you're looking across the landscape. Mm-hmm. So he very carefully placed the roads so that they would not make the picture of the landscape, you know, look bad. It made it look natural. You couldn't even see the roads.
Right. Well, this is one of his masteries, one of his artistries, his ability to hide roads running through a park or an area.
And you mentioned artistry, Troy. That makes me look at the term in line 24, fundamental canvas of Olmsted. And what that says is the landscape was his canvas and he was the artist.
Interesting. So that's what we mean when we say that Frederick Law Olmsted changed the face of America. We're talking about the land. Well, tomorrow we're going to talk about the U.S. Capitol grounds. If you've never been to Washington, D.C., you're certainly missing something else that is spectacular to see. And the man responsible for designing the terraces and the grounds around the U.S. Capitol building is none other than Frederick Law Olmsted. Well, until next time, this is Troy,
Ethan,
Phil,
and Bill
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.